What's up? This is Mike Fenoya from Amigos, and Amigos Podcast is In the Loop, the legion of Osiris Podcasts. Osiris is creating a community that connects people like you with podcasts and live experiences about artists and topics you love. Check out OsirisPod.com and stay in the loop. Sign up for the newsletter to learn about the newest podcasts and events. Relics Magazine is a media partner of Osiris. For music news, go to relics.com. Hey, what's up? It's Mike Fenoya. Welcome to the show. Today's episode is brought to you by our new sponsors, Kushco. You know those cool containers that cannabis and hemp products come in? Those jazzy joint tubes and edible wrappers? Well, Kushco is bringing them to the market and changing the game. Kushco Holdings, publicly traded under the ticker KSHB, is the parent to innovative cannabis industry leaders such as Kush Supply Co., Kush Energy, The Hybrid Creative, and Kalito Packaging Solutions. And they've sold more than 1 billion units to more than 5,000 legally operated medical and adult use dispensaries and growers across North America, Europe, and South America. For more info, go to kushco.com/podcast to learn more. That's kushco.com/podcast to learn more. Hope you guys are doing awesome. Welcome back to another episode of Amigos. Hope you guys have enjoyed the show so far. If you're enjoying it and you're having a good time, do me a big favor for Christmas this year. Go over to our Hanukkah or whatever, Festivus. Head over to iTunes and give Amigos with Mike Fenoya, the show you're listening to now, a 5-star rating, a glowing review, subscribe, share it with your friends. Get in touch with me at AmigosPod, AmigosPod, on Twitter and Instagram. And let me know what you're thinking. Let me know who you want me to talk to. I've got a lot of great shit coming up in the hopper, and I'm very excited to bring it to you guys. And, you know, everybody over here at the Amigos Podcast and Osiris Network is pretty stoked for stuff coming down the pike. So stay tuned and show us the love with the reviews. It is getting nippy here in New York, and I've got a real nice episode to warm your soul here. You know, I think no matter what you do in life, whether you're, you know, punching a clock, working for the man every night and day, or you're following your bliss and doing what you love, you come across people that, you know, you're just glad to know them, and you can learn from them, and they keep you kind of motivated and inspired, and you can, you know, look at what you do and think about, oh, how can I do this better? Or what am I doing that's already working? And, you know, that just bring a lot of like calm and peace to what could be a very stressful and anxiety ridden life. And my guest today, Ted Alexandro, is one of those guys. Starting out doing comedy in New York is such a blessing because you get a chance to check out so many different styles, so many different, you know, personalities and characters, both on and off stage. And, you know, we're all kind of a little bit, you know, narcissistic and egomaniacal. And, you know, it's a rough industry. But every now and then you get a chance to check out someone who reminds you that, like, we're doing what we love, you know, like we're here by choice and it doesn't have to be, you know, stressful and brutal all the time. And Ted's that dude for me. Always been a fan of his comedy. He's got 3 incredible specials out that if you go to TedAlexandro.com, you can learn more about those. We sat down in Queens, beautiful Astoria, Queens, to talk relationships, talk love, talk inspiration, talk travel, saying no to things, which I tell you, that's something I've recently learned, is to not be so available all the time. Every now and then you got to kind of put your peace and your peace of mind first and prioritize yourself before the fear. Comedy's filled with fear of like missing an opportunity or being crossed off someone's list. And you don't have to worry about that so much. And I thank Ted for you know, kind of being a mentor in that sense. And also just, I mean, haven't even touched on the fact that his comedy is second to none. I mean, it's patient. It's well thought out. It's methodical. It's funny before anything else, but he's got a message, and it's really neat. And it's an honor to always chat with him. So I really hope that you guys enjoy the episode, and definitely check out Ted's new special. Bill Burr and Al Madrigal's company, All Things Comedy, who is now putting out specials, put out Ted's new special, Senior Class of Earth, that was recorded at the Village Underground in the West Village in Manhattan. And it's an unbelievable special. It's really great, and it's a room that I hold near and dear to my heart. And the way that it was captured was unreal. Ted's on the road headlining weekends around the country when he's not opening up for Jim Gaffigan on his arena and theater tour. So be sure to check out All Things Ted. Enjoy the episode. And as always, head to MikeFenoia.com for dates, at Mike Fenoia on social media, at Amigos Pod on social media. Thank you guys so much. See you next week.
Osiris.
Hi, Ted.
Hey, Mike.
How are you, buddy?
I'm good, bud.
Introductions to a podcast is always weird
because yeah,
you have to almost like, pretend like you haven't been talking for 5 minutes.
That's right. That's right.
Oh, hey, Ted. I happen to have my microphone on. Would you like to chat
Funny
with me?
I ran into you with my mic.
What the hell am I doing sitting in your living room? How weird.
It's odd.
This is a new, since we last, you were on my my other music podcast.
That's right.
And we were in the Bachelor Pad.
Yes.
In another part of Astoria.
Yeah, so much has changed.
So much has changed. Our hair is still the same.
That's true. I don't think that's changing.
That's not. That hasn't at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're in another. But we're not too far from where you used to live.
No. Still in Astoria. Yeah. Maybe a mile away from where I was. I was down by the water by Astoria Park for like 15 years.
Yeah.
And then my wife Madeline moved in with me when we were still engaged, and then we had kind of a bizarre neighbor situation that we had to flee from. And
really?
Yeah, just someone who was I guess just like mentally ill or something. So we just like, it was getting more and more like disruptive to the whole building.
Wow.
So to the point like they were trying to get her out and stuff. So yeah, we were like, the handwriting was on the wall of like, and we were thinking of getting our own bigger place.
Sure.
Because that was just a one bedroom anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So we were like, all right, let's explore the suburbs of Astoria.
Yeah. Which is so funny to think of, like when anyone thinks of Queens, even outside of New York, it's like,
right,
they don't think suburbs.
Right.
But it's so true. It's a beautiful little space here too.
Thank you. Yeah, it's perfect. I mean, it's nice because, you know, my wife Madeline is, you know, she's an artist, a designer. So it's so funny, like as a single bachelor, you kind of delude yourself into like hanging one painting and thinking like, you know, I really class this place up, you know.
Absolutely.
But then when she comes along, it's like, boom, you know, like you mentioned the plants earlier, like plants and stuff. It never even occurred to me like, oh yeah, plants might be a nice way to bring some life into them.
It's the unbelievable. Space, you know? So I think you know this now. For the past 4 or 5 years, I've been living separate from my wife.
Yes.
But we're married.
Yeah.
So she's up in New England, and I have my, now when we last spoke on the podcast, I was living with Oakerson.
Right.
And
right.
Now I have my own place.
Yeah,
I got my one bedroom in another part of Astoria.
Yeah.
But man, you hit the nail on the head. Like, it's not a bachelor pad because I'm not bringing chicks home.
Right.
But I look around and it's like the only thing that separates me from like college me is now my posters have frames on them. You know what I mean?
Like, baby steps, man. Baby, you know?
Maybe by the time my wife and I move back in together, I'll know how to feng shui a place.
Yeah, maybe that's what she's waiting for. She's waiting for you to be ready to live with her.
I think that's what it is. It's so interesting, you know? And I think that you and I kind of both had that, like, because you, how old were you when you got married now?
So it was, we just had our 1 year anniversary.
Congratulations.
Thank you, thank you. So yeah, I was 48.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
And as now you're one of five children.
That's right.
Are you the last one to take the marital plunge?
No, I'm actually the third of the five of us to get married. So I have a brother and a sister who are still single. Yeah. So it wasn't like I was kind of bringing home the caboose of the marriage train.
I didn't know if you were getting pressure from the fam.
No, luckily my family is pretty low key with all that stuff. There's minimal expectations. So yeah, I was all right.
I think that some people kind of like, I get a lot of weird, you know, what's funny is people who hear about the way that I'm married.
Yeah.
Who live that kind of like suburban American dream marriage where it's like, you know, you go to work, I go to work, we come home, we somehow afford the mortgage, maybe we go to Applebee's on a every other Friday.
Right.
They hear what I'm doing, and then after they get a couple of drinks in them, they kind of almost get this very like, who do you think you are?
How dare you?
How dare you buck the trend?
Yeah.
And it's funny to
it
see
is
people
fascinating.
Get mad.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know what the end game is.
Yeah.
And that's something that like has come up a bunch where it's like her job up where she is fantastic. She's been in a situation there for years. So it's like, how could I ask some, you know, and the last thing you ever want, and I think you'll, you know, attest to this, is you don't ever want to like beg someone to live your situation.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. And I guess if you're both kind of, first of all, you love each other. Second of all, you're kind of creative thinkers of like, okay, how do we make this work?
Right.
You know, because some people, like you said, don't see options. And it's kind of like, all right, this isn't going to work. But like if you love each other and see options, then it's like, all right, let's figure it out. You know?
Yeah. And I remember being so nervous going to her and being like, hey, what do you think about this? Because, you know, I'm a visual learner and I kind of almost mapped it out and was like, if I stay here and try to trek down to the city.
You had like a PowerPoint presentation. Okay, here's I-95.
And I was like, right. That's our marriage.
Right.
PowerPoint. That's great. I was like, do you prefer keynote or PowerPoint?
Yes.
I had snacks made out for her. And
perfect.
Everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Set yourself up to succeed.
But I was excited to hear, like, you know, because you so, I mean, I've always looked up to you in stand-up, but also like that, you did a late-night Letterman that, I mean, you batted 1,000. I think every single joke got applause breaks when it was the, I did it.
Oh, that one. Yeah, yeah. Thanks. Yeah, that was, yeah, I did this late-night set. It's, I guess it's on YouTube, where I talked about being in my, I guess at that point, maybe early 40s.
Yeah.
Never married, no kids. I did it.
Made it
through the maze. So that was kind of the theme of the whole set. And actually, that was the name of my last album,
yes,
too. So,
yes.
Yeah, so it was like very prominently featured in my stand-up, you know, kind of like what you said earlier of like bucking the trend of like that expectation of like what a happy life looks like.
Mm.
Because for me in my early 40s, I was really happy, you know, unattached.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a lot of the stand-up dealt with kind of, you know, playing against those expectations of like, oh man, what's wrong with you? You're you know, are you ever going to hook up with anyone? And I was like, you know, I'm really quite happy and, yeah, and enjoying my life, you know?
Yep. And you had, you know, it's always fun to hear your take on things too, because, you know, when guys that are in there kind of, you know, I try very hard not to fall into that. So I'm married, you know, like on stage.
Right. Sure.
And you don't want to turn into that dude.
Yeah.
The married guy on stage.
Right.
Because that ends up kind of, not only is it polarizing, but it's also kind of, you don't want your writing to fall into that trend. And I've watched you with your new special even do it a whole different way.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, there is like, I guess it's human nature in a way to kind of just fall into the way people are talking about things, or kind of the presumed context of like, okay, you're a married guy, start bagging on your wife, start bagging on marriage.
Yeah.
And it's also kind of laced with misogyny, you know, like even if it's kind of with a wink and a smile,
right?
It's, you know, it's lazy, I think, you know. Now, don't get me wrong, like, you know, there's struggles with marriage and there's struggles with, you know, kind of figuring things out. So that's where a lot of the humor can be found. But like you said, I don't want it to be this easy thing of like, oh man, women are, you know, nuts, or, you know, like it's, you know, just those simple kind of go-to, and they will get a reaction, but you know, it's to me, it's not interesting.
Right. Me neither. And there have been times where I've found something happening in my day-to-day routine where, and I don't mean comedy routine, I mean life routine, where I do get that 1.5 days a week with my wife, where it's like we're trying to cram a week of marriage into, you know, 48 hours.
Right.
And things will happen and things will come up, and it's that kind of hackneyed, you know, joke premise stuff, mm-hmm. where I almost kind of have to just, that's not going to make it into the set. Like, mm-hmm. I can't, you have to like almost, cause those things that are hack in comedy do happen in life, which is kind of what makes them hack.
Right.
But,
right.
You know, just looking through a little bit further, I found it very hard, and I still don't really talk about it much on stage, my situation living separate.
Mm.
And I've tried so hard to write about it. And I think that's the problem, is that maybe I'm trying too hard. It just hasn't become funny to me yet.
Yeah, well, maybe just talk on stage. Don't necessarily write it out.
Mm.
Just because I feel sometimes when you're in that sink or swim moment in front of a crowd,
yes.
your brain will find it. Your brain will, like, you're looking for the life preserver of, like, what's the laugh line?
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, like, when you're sitting down writing something, like you said, you're maybe trying a little too hard.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, because it is such a fascinating, like you said, dynamic where people are like, wait, you do what?
Yeah.
Yeah, but also, like, to your point about, like, talking about marriage, talking about those dynamics of relationships, I mean, there's going to be overlap, of course. So it's not that the what happens is hack. It's like, how am I going to talk about this? Mm. You know, because, like, I have a joke in my new special about, you know, apologizing to my wife, and kind of learning that, you know, but then even sometimes when you apologize, like in the bit, you know, like my wife is saying, it's not just about, you have to understand what you did. You can't just, it's not just saying, I'm sorry, and it's over,
right.
You know? But then also kind of connecting that to, you know, women put up with so much crap from men, their entire lives, family, coaches, teachers, classmates, bosses. By the time they finally settle on you, it's like they finally got through to customer service and they've got some complaints about the product.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
So
I love that bit.
Thank you. Yeah. So not to do a bit, but just to illustrate that, you know, like that's a common dynamic in any relationship. But when I kind of stumbled upon that idea of like, you know, we can all relate to like waiting online, waiting on the phone for customer service and then just wanting to unload.
Mm.
So that to me is the challenge of like, how can I talk about things that maybe on the surface are trite and make it interesting?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's what's important with separating yourself from just being yet another married dude on stage.
Sure.
Yeah. And I think that we both kind of, I've been in love many times, but this is the first time I've like been, this is a whole other level of love.
Yeah. And I knew that from the time that I met my wife. We had dated like 12 years ago.
Yeah. I love. Yeah. This is so neat.
Yeah. When she was still in college, my one of my best friends, Hollis James, who I did Teacher's Lounge with.
Yes.
Introduced us. He was DJing at Beauty Bar in Manhattan at the time.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. So he would DJ there a couple nights a week. And he had met Madeline and a friend of hers. And he said, you know, I met this girl that I think you would really hit it off with. And at first I was like a little kind of like almost dismissive because he said she was in college and I was in my like mid to late 30s at that point. So, but sure enough, he kind of kept mentioning her. So then I went to meet her one night at Beauty Bar And it was an immediate connection. So we,
oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah. Just that sense of like, whoa, you know, this just something was, it was, you know, I knew right away that this was, she was different. And you yeah, know, I was intrigued.
It could have been the nail polish remover in the air for those, for the non-New Yorkers. let's explain Beauty Bar and what a weird,
that was a weird, interesting place.
Yeah.
Still there, I guess.
It, right? Yeah, yeah, it's still, I've done, they do stand up in the back room. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So Beauty Bar is on 14th Street mm-hmm. and it is a nail salon.
Yes. Like old style,
old
with like those hair dryers that you put over your head.
Yep, yep. And, and they're doing nails and manicures and all that right up front.
Yeah,
where there is a DJ.
That's right.
And a bar.
Yeah.
And in the back room is like if you opened up, like if Marilyn Monroe's brain opened and turned into a room.
Right.
It's this big glittery back room, and yeah, they have comedy shows back there.
Yeah, and that's right.
What an unreal! That's just so New York. Of
yes.
Like, how could we turn a thing into a bigger thing?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's pretty fascinating.
That's a smell that I never really liked, the nail polish remover. So going in and doing shows there, I was like, oh yeah, man.
I always liked it. Did I always it liked really? That. Yeah, that kind of weird, like what's going on right now? What's that? What's it doing to my brain?
Yeah. Oh, we're getting into the small addictions of Ted Alexandro. That's a nice, you can, that's an affordable addiction. That's going to be like on TLC soon.
That's true.
And you know, it's so cool that you know, and I was excited to hear how you were going to talk about the situation and like meeting and all that. And you got right into it on stage, which is so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it was really kind of a long and winding road. Like we dated for a little, you know, maybe a year and a half the first time. And then she was going over to Milan for school and work, studying, doing an internship in fashion design. So she broke up with me at that point, and I was pretty heartbroken. I was pretty devastated. And I talk about this in the special too, of how like it got to the point where I was kind of pathetic. Like I was visiting her mom.
Love that. You so know, much.
Because her mom was like,
I've done that.
Yeah. Have you? Yeah. Yeah. It's like you're stalking a member of her family. like who
has
you
she brought me up?
Grasping,
has she talked about me?
Right. Right. Yeah. Grasping at straws. And her mom is such an amazing woman. So,
you just want to get like the smell of like the past,
the DNA. Yeah. Right. So, but then it came to a point where I realized this is really inappropriate and unhealthy and disrespectful to her and to her mom, to myself too.
Of course,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So then, kind of broke that off,
with her mom.
Which I joke about too. I broke up with her mom. So then like years went by, and it was in a way it was like a really cathartic experience because I had to heal from that. I mm-hmm. had to heal from like, you know, the person who I thought was going to be the one not being, and also kind of trying to get to that place of happiness for myself, wellness, healing, and also to the point of like wishing her well and, you know, just kind of detaching and hoping that she's happy. And I got to that point, you know, of like also like not looking her up on social media and just leaving all of that behind.
Yeah.
So then sure enough, fast forward, you know, to like maybe 6 years had gone by, 7 years. And then she reached out like maybe 3 years ago and said, you know, she texted me and said, I'm, you know, how are you? I'm in New York. And I knew nothing. I didn't know where she had been, where she'd been living. I really got to that point of
I'm proud of you for that
detachment. Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, like I said, still knowing that I loved her, I didn't want to be in this like denial thing of like, oh, screw her. You know, like, I wanted the best for her and for me. And dated other people and all this other stuff, had a whole other life. And then, yeah, so she texted me and, I was excited to hear from her. We, you know, and she had an art show in Brooklyn that I went to see, and we went for coffee. And it was just the same as that first time at the Beauty Bar. It was just like, oh, I love this person. Mm. So fun to be around. She's funny. She's smart. Beautiful.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So then it was just the right time. And before you knew it, we were engaged, and now we're married.
It's so cool, man. It's really wild. And it's so nice that you had that like kind of self-awareness to I want to wish her well. I want to growing up, I used to, I've been working on a bit about this, actually, about how my breakups were so dramatic. Like, in high school, yeah. I would be like, forget you ever knew my name. And then, like, as she was walking away, I'd be like, wait, can I get the math notes? For like, it was just, right. I'm going to see her every day. Right. We're 7 classes together for the next 3 years.
Yes.
And I'm like, forget you ever knew. Like, I was going to ride off on a horse into the distance.
Right. Until next period.
I was like, the fuck? Like, it's so ridiculous. I look back on that. I've told friends that, and they're like, you got to talk about that, you know?
Yes.
It's funny sometimes to talk to non-comics. And,
right.
And you bring up things that you don't even, like, you pass them over in your head as
right.
something that's stage worthy.
Yes.
And they're like, you got to bring that up.
Yes.
And it's funny to, like, kind of, but I always thought about that. Like, with breakups have always been such a, like, a terminal end of things.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah. I think people can, that's universal too, where
yeah.
everyone's had like one or two where it's just like, goes down in flames.
Catastrophic yeah. terror. Like, yeah.
And the behaviors that it brings out in you are like cringeworthy.
Oh my God.
Like,
yeah.
You're like, oh gosh, that was me.
I went through one right before I met my wife. Well, not right before, a couple years before the last serious thing. Mm-hmm. And I was working sales, and it was kind of like this, it was a period of my life that, like, you know, aside from all this stuff, I wasn't very proud of who I was.
Mm-hmm.
Sales brings out the devil in,
sure.
in you. And yeah. it's a thankless job, and you're being listened to on the phone, making cold calls and all this awful stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through a breakup, real tough. And a friend of mine who we hated each other. We were like oil and water in the
wow.
office.
Yeah.
And he was in the cubicle in front of me. And he popped his head over the wall, and he was like, listen, I know we don't like each other, but I just went through a bad breakup, and I'm going to help you through this.
Wow.
And his idea of helping me through it was tequila shots
right,
and strippers right. and trips to Vegas and all this other, you know, and it was right yeah. around when, like, social media kind of really started to become a thing. And mm-hmm. you fall into this kind of trap where, like, you know, I was partying, and every morning I'd wake up and kind of almost like want to scream, I'm sorry, like, to the world, because it's like, who did I tell? You know, I would just get drunk and just start like crying and rambling to people. And
right. Imagine clubs. This, the guy that I hate, this is his path to wellness.
Exactly. Like, maybe we should just stay facing each other, you know, the other way in the cubes. But
right.
it's nice to find someone who appreciates what you do. And, you know, us being music freaks and music nerds, did she, do you guys share a similar or unique music taste? Have you brought
yeah,
stuff to each other?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's overlap, but then there's like kind of whole areas where, you know, she's a lot more knowledgeable than I am, or vice versa. It's funny because even though she's 18 years younger than me, like, her knowledge of like 60s rock, you know, everything from like Joni Mitchell, Bob Dylan, you know, all that stuff, she knows like the whole catalog of like those types of artists.
Wow.
Where, like, you know, I'll know the hits and maybe some of the deeper cuts, but like, she knows all of it.
Wow.
Cause she grew up with older siblings too. So,
oh, okay, think, cool.
Yeah. She's the youngest of five.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, as you know, like, I had majored in jazz piano. So
yep.
I kind of dug deep into, to jazz, at that point in my life.
Yeah.
And yeah, so there's probably some knowledge that I have in that area, but yeah, so it's cool to yeah. kind of,
isn't there something so sexy about like a woman that appreciates music
oh, yeah.
to that level that like they're yeah. taken away by it?
For sure.
God, there's just something that's just,
yeah. Yeah. And yeah, just like the passion and the knowledge of stuff, like, where, you know, you're learning from somebody.
Yes.
Yeah, that's always fascinating to me. And I remember, like, when we dated the first time, what's the name of this? White Rabbit by Jefferson
Airplane.
Jefferson Airplane.
Yeah.
Came on the radio, like, on one of our dates. And she just sang it from the depths of her soul, like, belting it out in the passenger seat.
Really?
Yeah. And you know how that ends, like, feed your head.
Yeah.
You know, and it was
it
like,
climbs levels as
yes.
the song goes on. Grace Slick's voice gets like, when the men on the chessboard,
yes.
gets like bigger and bigger.
Cause it starts out with that kind of,
like, sliding closer to the window.
I was like laughing and relishing it because it was like, she's funny. So it was like performance, but it was also like, she meant it, you
yeah.
know, it was just like from the soul. So yeah, that was like another moment of like,
and it might have been that one of those songs that's just in her range that she knew she could nail.
That's
like
probably
Neil
it
Diamond's
too.
Are mine. Like I can really hit Neil Diamond pretty well.
Oh,
if I have to get like hello,
like,
you know,
like Neil Diamond in what was it? I guess it might have been the '80s.
Yeah,
for us anyway.
Yeah,
had that run of like Hello and
Cracklin' Rosie.
Oh yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Turn on your heart light.
Turn on your heart light. The ET song, right?
Let it shine wherever you go.
Yeah. Well, he is right in your range. But I was. I saw him at Madison Square Garden.
Oh my God!
When
really?
I was in college, yeah, I went with a couple of friends.
Jeez.
And that was, I mean, you know, it was almost like I accepted the invitation because, like, it was going with friends. It's like, all right, yeah, we'll check it out.
Yeah.
But it's one of those where you forget, like, oh man, this guy's got a lot of hits and he's charismatic. He's a great songwriter.
Sure. Yeah. It's fun. He's almost kind of like a Brooklyn Elvis in a way where he's very like croony, but also just, like, good looking dude.
That's right.
But like a man's man kind of at the same time.
Yep.
That's amazing when you go to those shows where you're like, oh my God, yeah, this is a Neil Diamond song too.
Yes.
I forgot like Brooklyn Roads and like, you know, all those great. And then everyone's like, play it now. Play it, singing along with Cracklin' Rosie.
That's right.
Yeah. That's so cool.
I'm glad
that you guys are able to share that, like, with an 18-year gap, too.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, because, like, people sometimes ask about that. You know, like you were saying, the presumption of, like, with you and your wife living apart, people, have kind of preconceived notions. And the same with the age gap. People, like, have this thing of, like, oh, you know, like, you're just married and a young woman or whatever. But it's like, I never even really entertained marrying anyone else. As you talked about earlier with my old set, I really was in a place of, like, kind of just moving along through life, mm-hmm. enjoying it, navigating whatever came. But with her, there was this ease. So it's, I don't think about, you know, and I know it's probably what people say, but yeah, I never thought about the age.
No, and I don't think about living apart.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny that, like, and you probably, I don't know if you get this too, but like 1 in 10, 1 in 15 couples that I'll meet that I talk about it with, they go, oh yeah, me and my wife, you know, I'm a pilot, she's a whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And we live, you know, we see each other once every 2 weeks and
wow.
this and that. And it's like, they're like, it's fantastic.
So it's more common than you think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just similar with like there being like an age gap.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just people's perception is their reality.
Right.
And most people have such a blinder life.
Well, even with, you know, comedy, you know, I'm touring with Gaffigan a ton. So that's, you know, it's not like we live apart, but that winds up being Friday and Saturday a lot of weekends, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's, I don't know, if it winds up being 6, 8, 10 days a month sometimes.
Yeah.
That you are apart. And I don't know about you. I'd be interested to hear. But like for us, you know, then you kind of have like a couple days where you're living alone and she's working on her art or, you know, meeting up with friends or, you know, and I'm on the road doing all these different cities and, you know, getting to hang with Jim and stuff. So then when you come back together, you know, like you have stuff to talk about and you have your own individual life.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, you know, like for instance today, like I was in San Francisco this past weekend and I flew back and I didn't have any spots. So basically what I kind of try to do is if I don't have shows, and sometimes I'll purposely not put in for certain days.
Mm-hmm.
Which side note, I learned from you just by proxy, which I'll get into in a minute.
Mm.
But if I know I don't have anything going on, last night was a night where I was going to come back to Queens and it was just cold and she came home from work and I was like, you know what, I'm just going to stay the night. And I woke up at 5 a.m. and drove down, beat the traffic.
Oh, wow.
Got a great spot in front of my building and now I'm set up for a couple days or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And then I worked the weekend and then we basically kind of, you know, when you have a car and your alignment starts to go and you just get used to holding the wheel at like 20 degrees.
Yeah.
That's kind of where normal becomes.
Right.
You know, and we're abnormal to start with because mm-hmm. of our schedules and our, and only lately have I learned to say no to things.
Yeah.
Or take priorities different. When I was hosting a show at The Stand, and even recently with the show I host at The Cellar, I've asked you, like, do you want to do shows? I always love having you on my shows. And there have been times when you're like, you know what, I'm taking a little bit of a breather right now,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, I've got too much going on, thank you anyway. And the first time you said no, it knocked my socks off. I was like, comedians can say no? Do you know what I mean? Like, when you're young, yeah. and it's and you're hungry and you're scared,
yeah.
that there's like this imaginary line a million miles long behind you ready to like
right.
Black Friday stomp over you to get that, you know.
Right, right.
You kind of get nervous. And I never forgot you said no to a gig, and I was like, and it wasn't this kind of like, oh, Ted must be doing great. You know, it was more like, oh my God, like, you can say no to things.
Yeah, yeah.
That was wild to me, dude.
Sure.
It may not seem like a big deal because you're the one that said no, but I was like, that's like, you have a value on your personal time and,
yeah.
and your life. And that's so incredible to me.
Thanks. Yeah. I've had this kind of, I think, inherent sense of like balance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, like, no disrespect to you, but if you know, the Tonight Show had called that night, I probably would have made time.
Finally, the truth. I've been telling everybody how nice you are. Don't listen to Ted's new special, everybody.
So you know what I mean, though. It's like, you
of
know,
course, I'm a young comic that was asking you to do a show on like some Monday night or whatever. And
but I do that with the Cellar too. Like, I, you know, like where if you know, like they have a spot open up, or, you know, sometimes I just,
well, I'm gonna wreck your place. Now that
that's
you,
all right.
I got it.
That's right, man. I crossed the line.
If the Cellar, if a spot opens up,
yeah, you know, I kind of just assess like if I need my own personal time for my own like mental health and for
yeah.
my own balance, you know, because like I said, with the travel, with doing stuff with Gaffigan, or even my own weekends on the road, sometimes you just need first off, like, I need to be with my wife and just have, whether it's a night going out or simply a night at home,
right,
watching TV or just hanging out, sitting with each other. You know, all of that is important. So like when I start to assess, you know, do I want to do another show on a night off, or do I want to hang with my wife? It's a pretty easy decision, you know,
yeah.
like, and again, it is balanced. So I also don't want it to sway to the thing where I'm saying no to too many things, but you know, I try to have a good handle on like, and also like to go in swings of like when it's time to put the pedal to the metal. And, you know, again, I'll communicate that to my wife, like if I'm getting ready for a special or I'm just feeling kind of a creative burst, then I'll just kind of pack the schedule and you know, and she understands that too.
That's great. And the understanding, I think, is the most important thing. And I think that my wife is very good at kind of, I don't want to say talking me off the ledge, but like kind of taking a minute and just saying like, why don't you just step back and look at what you've accomplished so far? And,
yeah.
and it's nice to hear that from outside of this every now and then. Cause I sure don't
yeah, yeah.
appreciate anything.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
It's hard to in real time. Yeah. But yeah. You need that perspective. And also like to your point of like saying no to things, there's a freedom in that and a power in that, that you're communicating both to yourself and to the person, and you know, to the universe, if you will,
yes,
of like, oh, I'm not operating from a place of desperation or from a place of lack. You know, there'll be other spots, and you know, if somebody does take offense to me saying no, you know, like if I do say no, I usually just explain what the situation is and say like, I'd love to do the next one or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just kind of like operating from your truth and from your power of like, this is where I'm at right now.
Right.
You know,
right. Yeah. Now this is your third special.
Yes.
Village Underground.
Yeah.
Such a great room.
Mm-hmm.
The second one you did was at Creek in the Cave.
That's right.
And where was the first one recorded?
The first one was in Queens at Flushing Town Hall, which is like this kind of historic space, where they actually do a lot of jazz and small
nice.
Little things. So yeah, it was cool.
Cool. Cool. So, I mean, I was at the recording of the creek, I did it.
Yeah, yeah.
Without even knowing I was at the recording.
That's right.
Now, like, was that, did you know you were releasing that as it was?
No, the way that came about was, you know, the creek in the cave here in Long Island City.
Yeah, we should explain for the listeners that.
Yeah, it's kind of a cool, like, almost, I liken it to, like, CBGBs of comedy. It's like this.
That's a great analogy.
Kind of little dark, like.
Almost black boxy in a sense.
Unspectacular space that's turned into this real like go-to spot for where so much interesting comedy takes place for probably over 10 years now, right?
Yeah, and with ownership that gives us such freedom to work out whatever muscle we're working on.
Yes.
So if it's to get ready for an hour, you could do a week at the creek.
Which is exactly what that was. I was doing a week at the creek, which you do like a residency, you know, and I guess that week it was probably, I think it was a full week that week. So I did Sunday to Saturday.
Yes. Because I caught two of them.
Okay. And I recorded Wednesday through Saturday with no intention of it being an album recording or a special. I just asked my friend Matthew, who's a director, I said, would you mind shooting it? So he and his wife, Mary, I should say Matthew Weiss, he directed my last two specials,
mm-hmm.
and Teacher's Lounge,
yep.
And his wife Mary Borello. So they were like, yeah, we'll come down. They set up cameras. So it was pretty like kind of bare bones, but a couple cameras. It's a small space. It only holds like 30 people.
Right.
40 people.
Yeah.
And I was really recording it kind of for posterity and just to kind of have it and look at it. But when I looked at it, it was interesting to me, and it was, you know, it was kind of no frills as opposed to so much of the comedy specials we see. They're so like almost on steroids and on speed.
They're
you know?
Very shiny, and they're very like done up.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah. The energy of the whole thing is like people are too excited. The crowd is too excited.
That's a very good point.
It's like this is not what it's like. Usually when you take the stage, there's a smattering of applause. You know, those of us who are not, like, we're not celebrities, you know.
Right? Yes.
People are kind of somewhat indifferent when we take the stage.
Yep.
So these specials where people are out of their minds and, like, you know, the people are acting like, oh, my God, thank you so much. Like, you know, like you just won an Oscar.
Exactly.
At the beginning of your
special.
Yeah,
the first line's like, what up? And the place just goes bananas.
Yes.
That never happens.
Never happens. So my special, the last one I did it was... you said you didn't know it was, I didn't even know it was my special.
I've been interested to ask you about that because when I was watching it and I went with a buddy, Dan, that he's a Connecticut comic and we used to cruise back and forth together and he'll come down and visit every now and then, but we went to two of them. And I remember thinking to myself during certain points in that, like, oh, this is going to be kick ass on the special. Like I remember looking at parts of your set where I was like, this is really going to shine. And it was very interesting for you to choose a 30-seat capacity venue where some of the shows didn't even have 30 people.
No, some of the shows probably had, 15 or less.
I did a week at the Creek where we had three couples, so it was six people.
Yeah.
And I was getting ready to go headline DC Improv for the first time, and I really wanted to do it. It's a room I love, and I was really excited to go do it.
Yeah.
And, man, making two... You know, two older couples and one first date laugh for an hour.
Yeah.
That's hard, hard work.
It is hard work. Yeah.
So I respect that you used that. You used your gym set.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of what I liked about it. I was like, this is like a different kind of representation in terms of the special format of what comedy is, you know, because... You know, on the one hand, I think it maybe didn't do justice to some of the bits that, like, had I done it in front of a theater,
yes,
it would have been like, you know, maybe killing for, you know, for certain points that maybe got like just like solid laughs in the special.
Yeah.
But I was kind of willing to forego that just because, and also at that point in my career, I was probably just more... just like go with the flow and see what happens.
Sure.
Now, you know, like I'm probably more like pragmatic about like, all right, what's going to reach the most people and what's going to kind of do justice to the material and stuff like that. So, you know, but I wouldn't do it over. Like, doing it in a small venue with, in a setting that was kind of like, I was still finding some of the material too.
Yeah.
So I think like it's a cool thing to have out there to document.
Absolutely. I mean, like, I equate it to, Neil Young had, you know, Live Rust and a couple of big live albums. And then he had Live at Massey Hall, which is just him acoustic working out the stuff that was going to eventually be on Harvest.
Mm-hmm.
So he was playing Old Man and A Man Needs a Maid and all these songs that really, if he was playing it with his full, you know, repertoire and a big setting and whatever, but it was nice to kind of hear him in between going, well, this is a song about an old man that came with my farm that I bought and blah, blah, blah. That almost seemed like a gym set of music.
Yes.
And you did, for people that are listening that don't know the Creek in the Creek in the Cave, it's a very, it's like it's the comic book store for comedy fans.
Sure.
It's very like you had a crowd of comedy nerds that were there multiple nights probably to see you.
Yeah.
And a lot of comics that are sometimes scared to laugh.
That's true too. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I think the fewer people that are there too, you feel more conspicuous. So I think like the Friday and Saturday were pretty packed, but the Wednesday and Thursday were light. You know? So, but that brings a different energy to it also. Interesting that you brought up Neil Young, cause that's somebody that I admire so much. And I think, you know, there's a guy who has adapted over decades with remaining vibrant, remaining creative, and like challenging himself. And I think for us, like, we can get so hung up on like when something is ready or when something is perfect, or like, instead of just like, yeah, just letting it rip and, you know, sometimes like the magic happens when you're not prepared. You know?
Right. I recorded an album in Burlington, Vermont, and it was over Veterans Day weekend 2 years ago. And I had this story that I was telling. It was the first and the last time I ever told the story,
mm-hmm.
and I told it on the album. And someone yelled something out, and it luckily led, it like shot a spark off in my mind. And I went on this little, not at all like a comedian destroys heckler. It was more kind of me playing with them.
Comedian destroys veteran.
Veteran destroys comedian's flow. But I ended up going with it, and it was like, oh, this is so neat, you know. And it was one of those singular things that are never going to happen again.
Yes.
And I never even attempted to try to create that lightning in a bottle again, but it was just cool to be like, I'm glad I captured that when I did.
For sure.
And then just to the gods, you know, and just let it go.
That's right.
And this last one you recorded at, I mean, I think it has to be probably my favorite room in the world. Village Underground is so neat.
It's a great club. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, just the vibe of it, the setup, the way the room lays. It feels like kind of showbiz, you know, like
it really does.
It's like a great spot.
One of the three Comedy Cellar rooms here in the city, the fourth now in shiny Las Vegas.
That's right.
What makes you choose a room when you're choosing where to record? Did you want to do VU? Was that your first choice?
Yeah. So, you know, I've self-produced all three of my specials too. So that was part of it too. Like, I like the autonomy of making all those like little micro decisions that lead up to the final product. I approached Noam, the owner of the Cellar, and I also felt as though, like, coming off the last special where it was intimate and kind of small and quiet and almost, I wanted this one to be, like, higher energy, bigger space. You know, like, I don't play theaters myself, so I wanted it in a size room that I typically play. And I play the Village Underground all the time.
Yep.
And also the prestige of it being the Cellar.
Right.
So I just felt like the Cellar's my home club. So I felt all those elements, and kind of packing that room, it would have a great energy, and not too many people had shot things there at that point. So it just felt like the right place.
Yeah, it has almost kind of, you know, and when you watch the set, I don't know if it's the way the lighting is or what, but it almost kind of has like a smoky jazz club kind of vibe to it.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. That was by design. Again, Matthew Weiss and Mary Borello, we talked about how we wanted it to look. We didn't want to just bring in cameras and shoot. So they had like a smoke machine that kind of like gave it a little and red lighting.
It's so damn cool.
Yeah, the way they shot it was beautiful. All credit to them on that. Like we wanted it to be distinct and interesting. And the inspiration was there were two movies. One was a Nick Cassavetes movie that I'm blanking on right now, and the second one was the Coen brothers, Llewyn Davis, the
Inside
Ballad of
Llewyn Davis.
Inside Llewyn.
Yes.
Yeah. So that was the ones that Matthew brought to me and showed me some shots that were like kind of intimate club shots, kind of dramatic lighting. So yeah, I loved what they came up with.
It was fantastic. And and being a room that, you know, we're both, you know, it's my home club too. And I'm so proud to say that. Mm-hmm. And it's you're in that room quite a bit lately with the taping of the Live at
this
the
week,
Cellar,
this week
at
the
Cellar,
yeah,
on Comedy Central. It's very like illuminated, super bright.
Yes.
To see our room with that nice, dark, cloudy, kind of foggy. You go downstairs to the Cafe Wa, or you go to some of these jazz rooms in the West Village, and you captured that. You captured like the deep West Village essence.
Thank you. Yeah,
it's so cool, man.
Yeah, it really is. And again, that's all Matthew and Mary. And I'm proud that like I wanted the special to, since the last one was so stark, I wanted it to have like an interesting look. You know, now obviously a comedy special is more or less going to be one person talking into a mic, and you really should focus on like the comedian and the material. But as opposed to a theater where those can be a little bit antiseptic and just cookie cutter.
Sure.
The character of that space deserves to be part of the special, the Village Underground. So,
yeah.
So, and also the history of even that whole block in the West Village, and it's across the street from the Blue Note. There's just so much there. So you can almost like feel that too, which is kind of cool.
You know, I had a conversation with Noam that talks about being a kid growing up with, you know, his dad, Manny, kind of managing and running a lot of these gatekeeper music venues where, you know, Bob Dylan had to audition for Noam's dad.
Wow.
And his dad was like, this kid stinks, he's not going anywhere, because he just thought Dylan sounded terrible. But then he would hear other people sing Dylan songs and be like, this is really nice. And Noam would be like, you know, it's a Bob Dylan song. And he'd be like, it stinks. But it's just kind of, it's every time you whether you get off the subway or you get out of a cab or whatever and you're ready to go perform, you know, I go through the normal comic stuff where it's like, my career is not where I want it to be and blah blah blah. But if it's like a Friday night or a Saturday night and I'm down in the West Village and the music comes on and it's the Comedy Cellar and it's the weekend and we're here in New York City, and what more could I want?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure.
There's just some vibe about even the homeless in the area or the slice of pizza in the area. There's just some, everything tastes and smells and appears just a little bit more vibrant.
Yeah. Especially like there's so few places now that feel like a part of New York, like from yesteryear.
Yeah.
You know, but when you're on McDougal Street, sometimes as I'm approaching the Cellar at night, you just feel like part of the larger ecosystem. You just feel the energy, almost like the ghosts in the air too. It's just like, it's palpable.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember like in that Seinfeld documentary where he's standing at the top of the stairs and he's talking about how like the smell of the wood and like, you know, like it just smells like old booze and people used to be able to smoke in there and stuff like that.
Right. Right.
Now this special is you've kind of connected with Burr a little bit on
that's
this.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It was interesting because I was looking for a place to put it out. Obviously Netflix was the first choice, because that's where everybody kind of watches comedy these days, but they weren't putting out pre-produced specials. They kind of wanted to be in it from the go. So so after that, then I was kind of like looking around where I could release the special, and I had a good conversation with Al Madrigal, who's partners with Bill Burr in All Things Comedy, which is primarily, it had been like a podcast network up until that point, But Al said to me, you know, we're starting to look into releasing specials now. So you would be our first. I think they were doing Paul Verzi's for Comedy Central.
Yes.
But he's like, you know, we're going to do like a direct kind of release so that like comedians can just put out their work directly to consumers and be part of like the All Things Comedy brand.
Yep.
So it just all made sense in terms of like partnering with guys that I've known for decades.
Sure.
Who I respect. Yep. And so we put it out through All Things Comedy.
It's fantastic. And it's so cool that, you know, there's that taking care of each other vibe.
Yes.
With comedy.
Which is so much of what we do anyway. It really just is. Like relationships kind of, you know, over years. And then you plug in with each other periodically. And yeah, so they were just, you know, it was right place, right time.
And you know, they're going to be putting out someone, a mutual, very good friend of ours, Jessica Kirsten.
Jessica Kirsten's doing one with them too, yeah.
I mean, one of the most, I mean.
Oh, she kills, yeah.
The fact that people, that there's even a conversation that women aren't right. funny. I mean, yeah. Some of the brightest, most intelligent, ballsy
oh, yeah.
stuff is coming from female comics.
Jessica
comics
is always, yeah, Jessica is always one of those people that if you're in the back of the room, like the comedians are all dying because like she works on those two levels of like she's killing the crowd, but then she's also like commenting on the crowd a lot of times and the comics are cracking up in the back.
And
of
then
the
she'll even take it to the fourth level and be like, the comics back there are laughing and you're not. Yes. I love how scared you are.
Yeah. Turns her back on the crowd and kind of just talks to herself about how it's going, you know?
And it's funny, like hosting sometimes, you know, like I feel like, cause a lot of this is on a music network. So we have a lot of fans of the podcast that are new to comedy that come from a music world. But when I'm hosting a show and I pass you on the stage where I'm handing the mic off to you, I'm almost handing the crowd off to you mm-hmm. and I'm going off. We almost kind of have like a second and a half to 3 second, like passing of things, you know, like mm-hmm. I'm getting off, you're getting on. Jessica cracks me up when I bring her on stage. She's like, I don't want to fucking be here right now. Or she'll be like, I just took such a shit. Like she'll say whatever she'll say she something. Has to say just to make me die laughing. And right. there's certain, you know, you, her, Norton, you know, there are certain people, Dave Attell, obviously, that, you know, as hosting, like I see people a million times, you know, there's people I don't want to leave the room. Like I have to stand in the room and watch.
Oh, for sure.
You know, and Jessica's yeah. just one of those for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. She's a killer for sure.
So you and I both, I open up for the Impractical Jokers live tour.
Yes.
And I get to do all these gorgeous theaters. I think we do a lot of the same rooms.
That's right.
You've been out with Gaffigan now. In accord with, you know, you're doing your own tours and your
yeah,
own weekends.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then you go out with Jim.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a pretty neat opportunity that we get
yes.
to play these gorgeous, ornate, historical theaters
mm-hmm.
to these crowds that are so happy to be there.
Oh yeah.
We go up, we do 15 to 25, whatever.
Yep.
And then we go back and eat fruit and cold yeah. cuts and, you know,
it's insane. Yeah. It's the big time, right? So yeah, like when I'm touring with Jim, like we just played, the Vivint Smart Arena in Salt Lake City, Utah, which is where the Jazz play,
yeah.
the NBA, you know. So we do like a handful of these NBA arenas where it's as many as 14,000-15,000 people. You know, obviously like places that you or I just wouldn't be playing otherwise.
Right.
So it's,
yeah.
it's fascinating. It's, you know, it's surreal.
It's overwhelming at
yeah.
times.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just that the grandness of, you know, I looked at our tour coming up and we're doing like the Bridgestone Arena in Nashville.
Yes.
Where like the Predators play.
Yes.
And, I mean, I kind of like, I did Nassau Coliseum on New Year's Eve with them.
Nice.
And the walk to the microphone.
Yes.
it's just that much longer.
You're out of breath. Yeah.
People stop clapping like 30 seconds ago.
Yeah.
You kind of almost start jogging. And
yeah.
Do you remember your first time like having to realize that the projection of your, like the timing and all of that, do you remember kind of,
well,
we don't do sound check.
Oh, you don't?
No.
Interesting.
I know.
Wow. Yeah. We always do a sound check. Yeah. I mean, it's a little different, obviously, when you're playing, you know, we do it in the round too. I don't know. Do you guys do it in
the
round?
No, really?
Yeah. So like if we do Bridgestone or these NBA arenas, it's in the round.
So you're at center court.
We're at center court. And, you know, they obviously have those big screen TVs above us. So, which is another weird element of it, that a good percentage of people are just watching the TV.
Sure.
But yeah, like it's another kind of learned muscle, like all the steps of comedy, right? Like first you just kind of learn how to tell a joke and how to command a stage. Then you get past it, the comedy clubs, and you're middling, you're headlining, playing bigger venues.
Right.
But then, yeah, to get to that ultimate level of playing like these arenas, there's a little bit of a learning curve, but you know, when you have the muscle of performing, you figure it out pretty quickly.
Right.
And like moving, like if I'm in the round, I'll move just so that like I'm giving each section some attention.
Yeah.
You know how it is, like when you're sitting in an audience, you want to feel as though the performer sees you or is giving you some attention.
You don't want to feel like you have obstructed view,
right?
Like seating. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you've always been very good at patience on stage. And that's something that, you know, in watching a lot of comics, like I think when you were talking about, you learn you grow those different muscles mm-hmm. on stage. I think one of the most important chapters we hit in our kind of like story is not being scared of silence
mm-hmm.
on stage. And sometimes the bigger the room, you know, it could be whether you're in, you know, Madison Square Garden or you're at the Creek.
Mm-hmm.
If a joke doesn't hit, a joke doesn't hit. I mean, quiet, it's quiet.
Right.
But there's that purposeful silence that I think I kind of had to like, it was there and I didn't even know it.
Mm-hmm.
So doing like Constitution Hall in DC, and you tell a joke and it hits and it kind of washes away.
Mm-hmm.
I thought there were times I thought of you when I was coming off stage where it's kind of like, I hope to have that kind of let it pause, let it die down. There doesn't mm-hmm. need to be like bang, bang, bang. I'm not trying to like, you know, knock them out. I just want to like, let's give the joke what it deserves. Let's taste this wine. And
moment of silence for that last joke.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean,
no, it's true. And I think like you can communicate things with silence too.
Again, absolutely.
You're communicating kind of calm or confidence, that you're not in a rush, you know, that a lot of times they take their cue from you, you know? So if you're at peace and not kind of panicking because there's a silence or a pause, then they're fine with it.
Right.
You know,
the tour has brought you now, to international, destinations.
That's right.
You're
that's
recently
right.
in Greece
for Thanksgiving. Yeah, we did Athens.
Jesus.
Which I joked, you know, living in Astoria for the last 15 years, which is heavily Greek. I said, this feels very familiar to me.
Yeah.
I feel like I should hand one of you a rent check.
That's fantastic. You know? Did they love it?
They loved it. Yes. And what was really fascinating was, this was their first international show, Jim and I, as far as stand-up comedy goes.
Sure.
So there were maybe 15 or 20 Greek comics, Athens-based comics at the show. They all came out to support.
Really?
And just to kind of check it out and to show their support. So we were talking to them afterwards, and it was fascinating like how familiar they were with both Jim and I. Like they came over to me and they were quoting bits to me. I do this bit about classical radio and the classical DJs having very soothing voices. And they said they had seen it on Conan on YouTube.
Wow.
So it was really kind of surreal that like, you know, they told us that there were comedians there. So I knew we were going to meet them,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't know that they were going to kind of be fans of what we do, you know?
And that's so interesting to think about. I always wondered, now I've never done comedy internationally. I think the closest is Texas, probably.
Yeah.
But I think that what, you know, I hear a lot about American comics going over to, you know, Japan mm-hmm. or, you know, Italy apparently has like a pretty great scene. Matteo Lane was just talking about how he went over to Italy and did a set in Italian.
Oh, wow.
And it's very interesting because Jim Gaffigan's stuff is pretty American.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean it in the sense that like it's not, he encapsulates an American being.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
And even pokes fun at it, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So it is interesting traveling because like Jim is, he's been booking cities that it's not like we're going to play for expats, you know, because a lot of these ones, like I've done Hong Kong and I've done, you know, places overseas where the majority of the crowd that comes to see you is American expats or Canadian or, you know, that kind of thing. But these are like, we were playing for a Greek crowd. You know, we played Istanbul, Berlin, Cologne. We did a bunch of the Scandinavian countries. And yeah, so it's like the people, luckily their English is really perfect. Maybe there's, you know, depending on where you are, like some nuances of speech that you have to explain. If you kind of, you can always tell, like as you're on stage, like, okay, something went wrong there. Something was lost in translation.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
sometimes it just requires like another line of explanation. But, mm-hmm. But yeah, almost across the board, the crowds were incredibly appreciative that we were there.
Yeah.
But also just like great comedy crowds. After the first 5-10 minutes, you know, like you wouldn't have known that you were outside the States.
Wow. That's so cool.
Yeah, it really is.
That's really great. Now, do you, when you travel, do you get to bring your, do you bring your wife?
Yeah. Madeline came to the Athens gig because first of all, because it was such a long trip, you know, we had already done, Jim and I had done Istanbul, Cologne and Berlin. But then the Athens coincided with Thanksgiving. So, yeah, for those reasons, we decided, like, you know, why don't you come over for that? And then we'll extend the trip. So then Madeline and I had, like, 4 days in Athens as well.
Was that your first time?
First time for both of us, yeah.
Wow. What'd you think?
Oh, so cool, man. Yeah, because it's this kind of big metropolis. But then right in the midst of it is, like, ancient ruins, like the Acropolis is right on the top of the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it was like really like the marriage of like ancient culture with like a modern city.
I want to go so bad. And I really, I've been so focused on, you know, establishing and building for the past, you know, 8-9 years
yeah,
with, you know, here.
Right.
But I really want to head, like, comedy is a thing that can bring us to very unique and strange places.
It's so cool. Yeah, yeah. And now it's at the point where you just reach out. Like, you do a search on Facebook or Twitter for any city you want to go to and kind of hook up with local comics.
Hmm.
You know, it's funny. Like, when I first started touring with Jim, the way that came about was I was kind of, you know how I talked about earlier, like, being in this kind of go-with-the-flow phase. So I spoke to, you know, Ben Kronberg.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I love Ben.
Yeah. And Ben does a lot of these kind of DIY things and puts together tours for himself and
right,
plugged into a lot of like local scenes. So I was kind of tired of playing the comedy clubs and I wanted something a little different and interesting. So I reached out to Ben and he put me in touch with some people in the deep South of, like, I did Mobile, Alabama, Jackson, Mississippi, I think New Orleans. But they put together like 4 cities where I was just with these comics driving from gig to gig and they took such good care of me and showed me, they were kind of like essentially tour guides.
Oh, wow.
As well as being, comedians that I was working with. But while I was down in, I think I might've been in Mobile, Alabama, you know, just in the hotel lobby waiting to get picked up for the gig, and Jim called. This is about 3 years ago. And he's like, "Hey Ted, do you want to open for me on my tour?" And being like kind of foolishly like in that phase of like, let me assess everything. And I was like, "Can I get back to you?" So I didn't say yes to him right away.
Oh my God.
I was like, you know what
now
it was?
I don't
too?
Feel so bad about that Stan's show.
That's right. I was this close to saying no to Gaffigan, so don't feel bad.
Even Gaffigan's not the Tonight Show.
Yeah. So I said to him, because I remember mentally, I had almost carved out the summer, which was coming up, as like, I'm going to stay local in New York, do local shows, kind of not travel much. So when Jim said, "Do you want to tour with me this summer?" it was kind of counter to what I had envisioned for my summer.
Yeah.
So I was like, "Can I call you back tomorrow?" So then, like, of course, after like, thinking about it and talking to a couple other people, they're like, "What, are you crazy? Like, you have to, of course, say yes to that immediately. Call him back now." Yeah. So I did, and now it's been 3 years that I'm touring with
you. That's crazy. Yeah. That you almost said no to that.
I almost said no to
Unbelievable. Did you guys ever, did he ever like bring it? You obviously are pretty close with him.
Yeah. Yeah. We became friends. Like I was friendly with Jim, like, cause we had come up through the New York scene together.
Sure.
So I had known him probably close to 15 years already. Mm. But yeah, we've become obviously a lot closer because it's just the two of us, you know?
Yeah.
So you get to kind of go to dinner, grab drinks, check out the local scene, wherever you are. So it's been really cool.
When you go on the road, do you make it an effort to like get out of your hotel room and go like see things and, you know,
cause yes.
you could fall into that trap of like,
yeah,
there've been weekends sometimes where it's like, I don't think I've ever left the,
right.
the room.
Well, one of the good things about working with Jim is he's so intent on checking out the local scene. If there's something that like, you know, you have to do in a particular city, we always do it. Even if we get in there at like noon or one, he's like, let's go out and walk around for an hour and go to this museum or go to this historical
that's
site.
That's so cool.
And you know, he kind of taught me the importance of that because, you know, my disposition sometimes, my inclination would be if you're tired after a long plane ride. I mean, like to show you the extent to which he does this, when we flew to Istanbul, which was a red eye, you know, it must have been like 9-10 hour flight, whatever it was. We landed like maybe 8-9 in the morning, and he had set up a tour guide to meet with us. So we met them in the lobby at like 10 a.m.
Oh my God.
We went out immediately.
Jeez.
Yeah. So,
but that's fantastic.
It's great because you have an experience.
And that first step out of your room is always the hardest step.
That's right.
So when you know you have something built in,
yes.
you're not going to say no to them.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're doing it with a friend
that's
also.
That's so cool, man.
And also what it does is it gives you something to talk about on stage, even if you have a couple lines.
Of course.
Where you say, we went to this, or, you know, like the audience is intrigued, like, oh, you know, you kind of sampled what this city has to offer.
Yes. And
know?
It makes them feel like you said, again, like it's your... When you're up there and you're in the round or whatever, like you're making it like this is our experience.
You're invested. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
That's really neat.
Yeah.
I find that sometimes I need to, like, even I recently did Cellar in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And the week before, I'm looking up all these different hikes and all these different, you know, you can like go on a helicopter ride over the. I did none of it. I did none of it. I went to Starbucks and I went back to my room.
Yeah.
And my window looked out at the desert, and I just kept thinking I could just walk out there, and it'll take weeks before anybody found even my bones.
Yeah. Well, I don't blame you. Vegas can do that to you.
Vegas sucks. You know? Vegas really does suck. The club's great, but
yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So now that this special is done and the. You know, the hour, every, you know, all comics are like the hour.
Yeah.
Are you already on to the next, or do you just kind of let it build as it comes? Or
yeah. Well, you know, this new special, Senior Class of Earth, I probably shot it almost a year and a half ago now.
Mm.
So yeah, I am kind of like building the new hour, and I'm actually doing another week at the Creek, December 13th through the 15th.
Great. Yeah. This comes out Wednesday.
Oh, okay, cool.
So perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Thursday's
the
13th.
The day before. Yeah,
yeah, wonderful. Oh, that's great. So everybody go to creeklic.com, I believe.
Creeklic.com.
Yep. And
go
check it out.
Yeah, so I'll be doing Thursday, Friday, Saturday there, running the new hour and kind of, you know, finding the new stuff and
nice.
Working it through. Yeah, so, you know, I don't put myself into that, like, year time limit of like the next hour. I kind of, if it's 2 years, if it's 3 years, I'm fine with that.
Yeah. I think that's something that like I think about quite a bit too. And also in looking at some of my idols and my, you know, kind of the guys that have a couple of years up on me, you mm-hmm. know, whether it's you or even Okerson and some of the other guys, Mark Normand and them,
mm-hmm.
like it's, everybody's doing it their own way. Everybody's doing it different.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that what I'm finally starting to let go of is that whole, like, this pie needs to be completely baked and crispy on the edges before I, you know, serve it.
Mm-hmm.
Where it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. Like, sometimes it's like, you know, I used to get hung up on whether or not I was prepared for an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, if I had a joke that this idea is going to be like, you know, it's going to put me on the map.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not. It's just do the joke. Do you
That's
know
right.
what I mean? And
That's
just
right.
let it go and
yeah.
stop putting so much pressure and emphasis on each individual thing.
And that can be whether you're talking about a joke or a club that you're playing or a TV appearance or anything, if you put too much stock, because there's really no one thing that's going to like blow you up anymore. You
right.
know? So like to, it's almost counterproductive to put that pressure on yourself or the expectation on whatever it is that you're doing. Mm. Like you said, it's the next thing, you know,
yeah.
and you've been doing a lot of next things for, you know, years.
Yeah. Like just this weekend in San Francisco, I have a couple new jokes that I'm working on that I know aren't finished, but it was that whole, like you talked about earlier, like just getting out there and putting it out there, knowing that I'm treading water already. And mm-hmm. now it's like, I'm starting, my legs are getting tired and I have to kind of remember how to doggy paddle every now and then.
Yeah.
And that's the fun thing that audiences don't get.
Mm-hmm.
And it's our little kind of nice behind the scenes secret is that we have lobs that we know are going to crush. We
yes.
have those pitches that we know are going to keep us in the count.
Sure.
And then there's those other ones where we're just as scared as, you know, as the first time we ever got up there.
Right.
And that's
right.
what keeps it so fun, I think.
Yeah. But I guess in a way, like the skill and the professionalism comes in the audience really not being able to detect one from the other.
Yes.
I mean, they know the stuff that kills, obviously, but that even if it's something's new, it's, they don't see any panic in your eyes.
Right.
You know, you're
yeah.
just trying another thing.
That's a good feeling when
yeah.
you can kind of almost step out of the moment and be like, I got this.
Yeah. And, you know, I almost recently had to be reminded of the longer you're doing it, like I'm doing it like 25 years now, that you start to have this sense of like that, of what a finished bit looks like, you know? Mm. And I tweeted a couple of things and put up a couple of like Instagram things that were just thoughts that I had that obviously like that day, and they like not went viral, but they got a lot of traction, you know?
Yeah.
And it was just a reminder of like, you know, like you've been working on this skill set for a long time, so that ideas that you come up with in the moment, they can come out like finished. You don't have to have this notion that I gotta craft it. Certain things require that, but other things, like, they're just, you know,
you're
ready.
A factory and you've built the mold, and now the pieces that come out are already sort of molded to that mm-hmm. tested, patented kind of, you know, set.
Yeah.
That it's not something that's just like, you know, regurgitating 100 words and then pulling the 6 that makes sense. It's coming out already sort of polished.
Yeah. And you can trust yourself.
Exactly. And I think that's something that's, you know, this thing that we, you know, going back to the beginning here to kind of wrap up is, you know, the thing about me and my wife living separate. It's been on the top of every piece of notebook paper. And I just might as well just buy notebooks that have my wife and I live separate written on the top, because I've written it so many times that it's like,
yeah.
but just, you know, I'm making a conscious effort now just to go out and kind of like, you know, sink to the bottom and figure out how to make my way back up to the surface with that.
Well, I think too, that sometimes we put undue pressure on ourselves to get to the laugh line. Whereas like, that's such an inherently interesting topic. Like, just let it be interesting. Just talk about it.
Yeah.
At first, you know, just talk about like the arrangement and talk about like how people react to it and all the things that you were saying here.
Right.
Just the explanation is interesting enough to that people will lean in, you know, and then you can see where the laugh lines come. But I feel as though when you have an interesting topic that matters to you, that's unique, you've already got a gift like to work with, you know,
yeah.
and you don't have to work too hard. It's like hearing someone talk about something interesting is rare, you know? So
yeah. Yeah. It's very true. It is rare. And there is so much overlap with topic.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have something that you're living, and maybe it's just sometimes when you're so in it at the moment.
Yeah.
That it almost takes like, you know, this spring, my dog, we had to like put my dog down and just being in it for 6 weeks, knowing that she, you know, each day was kind of getting closer to the last and whatever. Like I've been able to talk about that on stage faster.
Now,
for
were you
some
living
reason.
Apart from your dog too? Or
yeah,
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And it was, I was on my way to Cleveland to do Hilarities, mm. and I brought her to the vet.
Mm.
And as I was getting on the, like the day before I was going to the airport, they did a biopsy and they're like, her spleen is like riddled with tumors. Like she's got to get it taken out, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I went back, you know, we found out she had terminal cancer and we said no chemo. And I started going back and forth to New York, skipping Queens altogether. Mm. And I had like a very busy schedule and I was spending all day with her and then like weeping on the way down here
mm-hmm.
and then trying to get up on stage and hosting.
Yeah.
Which is like the, you know, it's just, like, you got to keep
putting
like,
on the happy face.
You guys having a good time? Like, right. having a hand for your wait staff? Like, yes. kind of, and then going back and whatever. But my comic, like relief or whatever was being able to kind of now talk about, you know, a lot of the reactions that like, you know, some people were like, at least it's not a family member died. And I'm like, there's so many humans I'd rather put down than my dog, you know, and it just right. leads into a better.
Yeah.
And you never know where a joke, like every joke is like one of those rooms with eight doors and there's like nine lions behind, you know,
sure.
You open up one and it's like, oh, that leads to a safe path.
Yes.
So you really never know until you put yourself out. You know?
Yeah, yeah. And I think like you were saying before, like so many people talk about marriage in similar ways. It's like you have this inherently different thing.
Yeah.
That it's so, I think it's really worth exploring okay. and just talking about, you know, just talk about it. Like, don't put pressure on yourself. Just find a set where you have that room to play.
Yeah.
And just talk about it honestly, you know, and then I think, you know, you'll find the funny parts after, but sometimes I think we put too much pressure on funny when if you start with interesting and honest, you'll find the funny.
Yes, that's very
you
know? True.
Because what you're doing is you're ignoring the honesty of it and the, you know, you're ignoring all the things that that make it different. You're mm-hmm. not just saying, yeah, I live with my wife and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, all the other things that people who have a conventional marriage talk about, you know?
Right.
So like, you almost have to shift the audience's perspective first of like, here's, and also like, you know, the way that I talked about being in my 40s and singles and like, it was a celebration. It was a, I did it. I made it through the maze. Yeah. It's the same kind of thing. Like if you're saying like, this I'm enjoying, this is working, you know, and it's interesting.
Yeah.
You're not apologizing for it. You're just explaining it.
I think that's the big thing. You're not apologizing for it. And it's not something where I'm going at it like hackneyed where it's like, well, thank God I'm not living with that, you know, ball and chain. And
right.
It's more of like, wow, like.
Because then you could be the guy who like, you could be the guru for like people who are, you know, like, oh, wow,
who knows
people do that?
Yeah, it's true.
You know,
that's something that's very, I appreciate you saying that. And I think it's something that, and maybe it comes with a lot of like, self-imposed pressure, you know, there's only so many spots and there's only so many, you know, and I host quite a bit. And I kind of sometimes feel like the pressure of, you know, if I'm bringing you up on stage after Norton just destroyed or whatever, do I really want to like go into it and say like, I have 45 to 90 seconds in between comics. Like, let me get you guys on board. But what I right. agree with you is what you said is that like, find those spots, find those, you know, the beauty of our scene in New York is there's countless rooms mm-hmm. where I could go try something out and really sure. kind of dive deeper into, you know, a premise or a topic mm-hmm. and turn it into a larger chunk instead of, you know, just a, you know, quick setup bang.
Right. For
and
sure.
And that's the thing that I think is so beautiful about where we are in comedy today.
Yeah. And also I think the good thing about comedy, if you take the opportunity, is that it can make you grapple with things about your life. You know, it can make you like kind of make sense and kind of make peace with things that like, you know, if you're not sure about them or like if you're not sure about talking about them publicly, if in some way that you're keeping it a secret or whatever, it's an opportunity to like really own it.
Yeah.
And to be like, yeah, this is my life. This is my truth. And it's funny and it's real. And you know what I mean?
Like, absolutely.
Instead of like, you know, shying away from it.
Yeah. I found I go back to you know, Chris Gethard and Mike Birbiglia sometimes and watch some of the things they did in like that whole kind of soliloquy style.
Yeah.
Where it's, you know, the overarching theme takes precedence over the bing, bang, boom. I mean, of course, it's punched up and funny, but at the same time, it's so open and so eloquent.
Yeah, vulnerable.
Yes, vulnerable. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, there's different ways of doing it, right? And you find different colors. And like you said, it doesn't always have to be bang, bang, bang. Like there can be things that maybe are just interesting, you know, because as long as like there's a flow to the whole show of what, you know, if you're doing an hour or whatever, people like those different kind of peaks and valleys.
Yeah, absolutely. Ted, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. It's like cathartic.
Likewise, buddy. Thank
you. Can you tell everybody where they can find you?
Yes. People can go to tedalexandro.com. And you can find my new special, Senior Class of Earth. It's available at, well, the link is on my site, but ATC Specials is where it's currently housed. ATC stands for All Things Comedy. So atcspecials.com, you'll see it there.
Nice.
Yeah.
And at Ted Alexandro on all social media.
That's right.
And Teacher's Lounge is still up on
YouTube. Yeah, you can check out 10 episodes of Teacher's Lounge.
So cool.
It's got guys like Gaffigan and Dave Attell, Jim Norton.
Dave Attell playing the photographer.
That's right.
Holy shit. I'll tell you what, when I watch those, and I still go back and watch them a bunch, is there a chance ever of throwing out some outtakes? Like a couple of, I mean, if you guys have it on the cutting room floor.
It's funny you say that, because yeah, I was just thinking that myself, because I watched Bumping Mics with Attell and Jeff Ross.
Oh my God.
So great.
Unbelievable.
But it reminded me of when we shot Teacher's Lounge, of just a little bit of explanation. It's a web series that myself and Hollis James produced where I play the music teacher, Hollis plays the janitor, and then every episode features a different comedian as a faculty member. So we've got Dave Attell as the school photographer. Jim Gaffigan as the school nutritionist, Lewis Black as the principal, on and on. But yeah, there are so many outtakes because it was largely improvised. You know, we had like a tent poles of like points we wanted to hit, but we also wanted people to kind of riff and do their own thing.
Be themselves.
Yeah. So with Attell, it worked out amazingly because he's so great off the cuff. So we just had a parade of comedians come in and sit down in the chair for him to photograph, and he was just riffing on whoever was coming sitting down, and it was amazing.
It's so great. And at the very tail end, I think you throw one or two like outtakes on, like where he just makes you crack up about like what shirt you're wearing. And
yes.
God, he's a saint.
He's the best.
There's a lot of times you see like these like Grateful Dead memes or these like things where it's like, you know, in the history of the universe, I'm just happy that I could be here while Jerry Garcia was here. I feel that way about Dave.
Yes.
Like just to even know him and gain the trust. We've both done, you know, things with him, and it's wild to have someone that is so prolific and such a beautiful person inside like what you do. And to hear him laugh just that cigarette laugh.
Yes.
It's just the greatest thing in the world.
He really is such a special guy. He's like a comedy angel or something, you know, because his persona is so gruff and everything.
He is what a comedy angel would look like too, huh?
Right? Yeah.
like a, what do you call it? Like an unemployed umpire? Is that what Ross called him?
That's right.
Yeah. That's an incredible special, Bumping Mics.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Thank you, Teddy.
My pleasure, buddy.
Talk to you soon.
You got it.
Osiris.